these are investors, people who know how the markets work, and sometimes you can make...
Shorting are you talking about?
I never said that. You did.
Hello and welcome to another telecoms.com podcast. I'm joined this week only, I say only, but obviously it's a massive
I
treat.
I hear you.
By Ray Lemaitre, the editor of Light Reading, because Ian's been dicking about in Italy and Jamie's been dicking about in South Africa, on which we might talk more later. So what are we going to be talking about? Yes, so we'll probably talk about AfricaCom, where Jamie's been, and also Wei from my team. Although also your team, actually, in this capacity, has been over there. Wei's on everyone's team.
Team player.
He's a team player, yeah. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Telecom Italia and some of the boardroom shenanigans that have been going on there. I might talk a little bit about Ofcom finding EE and Virgin Media that I just wrote about earlier on today. And Ray, there's been a bit of sort of stateside M&A and that sort of thing that you've been covering on Light Reading, so we might cover that as well. And just to remind you that if you're watching this on the website or on Facebook or YouTube now, apparently, you can also listen to it on SoundCloud or iTunes. And if you listen to it, you can watch it on all those things that I just said a minute ago.
Before we start, you might have heard that Ray has a bit of a cold, so I got you this.
You got him. Oh, you've got him a little.
You have to try it right now, though.
Little energy thing.
No, it's a ginger shot.
Ginger shot.
A ginger shot.
You have to try it.
I don't know if he needs a ginger shot. He looks halfway there anyway.
This will turn me
right. So this
full
this could
carrot
be
top.
I'll put the rest of the podcast on hold while Ray has his ginger shot.
You don't have to take it all.
Tell me that now.
Oh,
it's effective,
right?
But it's extremely potent.
Right, that was a cruel thing to just lay on him without any warning at all.
No,
what are you going to do? Let's make it a weekly thing on the podcast.
This reminds me of when I was seven.
We should make it a regular thing on
Drink
the podcast.
That, son.
Like
right.
A sort of I'm a celebrity. Ray has to try random stuff on the podcast.
Spill your gut.
Exactly.
Good job, I like ginger.
God knows what bizarre foodstuffs you'd get from your native country.
Yeah, no,
some kind of invertebrate
English,
or other. Yeah. Anyway, so let's start off with AfricaCom. So neither of us have been over there, obviously, because we're still here, and those who have been over there are currently flying back. But we've been editing stuff. I'll start off with mine. Jamie's actually been very productive, fair play to him, writing a nice lot of stuff. And most of his stuff's been quite analytical, so he's been sitting in on the keynotes, and he's been chatting to people on the show floor. AfricaCom, for people who don't know, is one of the bigger events. It's run by our parent company, Informa. And it's the biggest telecoms event in Africa, I think.
Yeah, about 14 to 15,000 people.
It's the 21st edition, apparently.
21st edition, so they've been doing it quite a while. Mm. And it's really interesting because it's obviously continent-specific, as the name strongly implies. Mm. And so you get some different perspectives. We're used to talking about telecoms from a UK point of view and whatever considerations we have here. You know, we're all banging on about 5G, which we may bang on about yet further in a bit. We'll see how time is kind to us. And in Africa, obviously, they're thinking about that sort of thing, but then they have other considerations such as, you know, a lot of Africa's rural. So that there are sort of coverage considerations. The business models could be a little bit different. The average revenue per user, ARPU, is much lower. So there's all sorts of considerations there. And I thought Jamie did a good job of just summing up some of those considerations and asking our readers to sort of have a little rethink about how they would view Africa as a telecoms continent, rather than perhaps the most obvious way is of it being the continent where there's perhaps the least sort of revenue potential, ARPU potential, that sort of thing. So I thought that was interesting. What about you, Ray? Have you been checking some stuff out from there?
I have. And, you know, the low ARPU is definitely a thing, but that doesn't mean that companies can't make money. And we've seen this over the years in India as well, that it's possible to, you know, obviously scale helps. But money can be made, and we see that from the main African operators now. I think it's an incredibly interesting region. You have to look at it in that sense. It's about 50 markets.
Yeah.
And some of them are very small, and some of them are very underdeveloped. But you have this incredibly wide range where you've got the first Africa 5G tests going on right now with MTN is doing this in South Africa. At the same time,
not too far away. In some of the other markets, you have no 2G coverage whatsoever. Wow. In some parts of the country, depending on which country that is. And so at Africacom, I know this week that they've discussed all manner of things that are being discussed as next-gen technologies in lots of different ways. There are all the aspects of 5G. There was a big blockchain panel discussion at Africacom. So they're talking about all the same things. And AI was absolutely massive. The AI summit was there for the first time. And, of course, these are all relevant. Everybody should be talking about these things. But I think, you know, what... And I know this was still discussed, you know, quite extensively, connecting the unconnected,
yeah.
You know, bridging the digital divide, all of these things. And what's very clear, and I noticed this actually about a month ago following the TIP summit in London,
yep.
Where one of the senior executives from NTM came along and presented how they were looking at using some of this new breed of infrastructure to build out networks in a slightly different way, and that got the story about that we ran on Connecting Africa, which is
right.
The community we run, which is aligned with AfricaCon, got the most reads of I think of any story ever on Connecting
right.
Africa, and I know the reason for that, and that's because I think amongst all of the operators and the suppliers and the integrators and everybody in Africa, they look at the world and they go, well, you know, there's 4G happening over there, 5G, etc., but they need something slightly different. They just don't need, okay, you're a shipper over some of the stuff that you're deploying in the US
yep.
or Singapore or the UK, because it's not really appropriate. You need different, the geographies and the climate mean that you need actually different things. You need different types of power supply. You know, the outside plant needs to be protected in different ways. They need specific
yep.
kind of, you know, types of technology to be deployed there. And I think in some ways that's what is often forgotten and sometimes missing when stuff is offered to the African markets.
Yeah.
It's a really fascinating, you know, the when I do get to delve into it a bit, it's incredibly
yeah,
fascinating.
I agree.
And also, of course, let's not forget that Africa is the continent that really is probably far ahead of anywhere else in terms of developing and commercializing a kind of mobile finance applications.
I was just going to talk about
yeah.
that myself, because that's one of the narratives I find most interesting. Obviously, there's plenty of parts of Africa that are developed and there's plenty of money around the place, but a lot of the population of Africa is quite rural.
Unbanked.
And unbanked, yes, that's one way of putting it. And that's, you know, as having been a sort of covering prior to this smartphones and now more the sort of network side, one of the things that's always enthused me the most about this overall sort of mobile market is how democratizing it is and how empowering of the individual it is.
Very much so.
So if, you know, back in the old days, if you're dependent on this quite rigid infrastructure, like you have to be able to walk into a bank and write checks and do all these things in order to get some basic financial services, if now everything can be done on a smartphone through a touch screen, you don't have to be able to get anywhere. You know, let's say you live in the middle of nowhere, even if there was a bank in the nearest town, if that's sort of 200 miles away or whatever. So it just empowers these people. What they choose to do with it, I'm sure there are lots of sort of agrarian Africans who are quite happy just doing that, and fair play. But at least now they've got the option to, as you say, partake in the sort of digital world, get involved in banking, get involved in things like
yeah.
loans and investment and
yeah,
all that
it makes
sort of
a
thing.
Massive difference to their supply chain and how they can run their businesses. But just getting access to up-to-date weather reports to
yep.
know that there's you know, a massive storm about to arrive
right.
or and things like this, just, you know, things we take for granted.
Yeah. And if that means that elevates the average African's sort of per capita GDP or earnings or however we want to measure it, then I think that's probably for the best for absolutely everyone. So it'd be a good news story all round. And that's why I agree, sort of covering this stuff has a unique thing. And it's also, any time covering somewhere as utterly different to the UK as that, it's just a little reminder of how small we are in the great scheme of things, and how much other stuff there is going on.
Absolutely.
So yeah, so that's all good.
But can't you, like, you can fit China, North America, and South America within Africa, in terms of, like,
possibly? So, I doubt North America, including Canada. That's pretty big.
I think so, actually. Surprisingly, it's yeah.
I suppose it depends. Sometimes those maps can be a bit confusing because they make Canada look
they shrink
really
Africa,
big.
So it'd fit, yeah.
But yes, massive continent. As you know, as Jamie and Wei have been finding by the 11-hour flight or whatever that it takes. You know, you're in the same time zone, but it's just a long way away.
It's like an hour behind. Yeah.
Look forward to hearing about some of the larks they got up to as well. There's usually some fun to be had. I was talking to some other people who remain nameless on the Informer floor, and they reassured me that some of the correspondence they've had with their colleagues out there, they've sounded a bit worse for wear. Good stuff. Keep it going. But having said how great it is to talk about other parts of the world, I'm going to bring it back to boring old Europe anyway, because that's where it's all kicking off at Telecom Italia, Tim to its mates. So they just got rid of their CEO, a chap called Amos Genish, who was brought in earlier on this year.
That doesn't sound Italian.
No, he's Israeli.
Oh, there you go.
But it's apparently not a prerequisite of being at Telecom Italia that you be Italian.
Right.
Just like we allow people from other countries into telecoms.com, Pierre.
That's me and Ray, then. Technically.
Well, Ray's borderline. He's just got a foreign surname.
Hybrid.
Yes. So, just a brief recap. At the start of this week, on Sunday, there were rumours that Amos Genish was going to get chucked out. They denied those rumours, and then 2 days later, chucked him out.
In a dramatic dawn boardroom meeting.
Yes, exactly. Well, we both covered it.
Pistols were involved.
We both covered it. Why don't you take off the narrative of what happened earlier on this week, and then I'll jump back in with the stuff I've been most recently.
They had a dramatic dawn boardroom meeting and sacked the CEO.
I mean, dawn.
Did you
at
dawn?
Yeah, it was at dawn. Yeah.
Somebody wrote this and said.
Was it 6 a.m.?
It happened. I mean, the press release came out about 8 o'clock when they'd already made the decision.
Yeah, they had the meeting, went for coffee. And then issued the press release. So, it came out a few hours later. But, they kicked out the CEO and then said they were going to have another meeting less than a week later to announce
Sunday
a new CEO.
Yes, which it's just slightly awkward with the timing.
Surely the Sunday just gone.
Well, quite. I was going to say, it's slightly awkward with the timings because we're recording this on Friday, but by the time we publish it, it'll be Monday, and a lot of this stuff we're talking about in the future tense will then be in the past tense. But, you know, what can you do? If you worked a bit quicker, Pierre, we wouldn't have this problem.
I can have it. Yeah, sure. Nobody's going to listen to it.
I'm just messing with you. Ray, just tell us a little bit, before I go on to the most recent developments, tell us a little bit more about the background of, why Amos was there, who proposed him there. Or are you giving me that sort of, land me in the... I don't know what I'm talking about, look.
I do sort of... Well, I mean, so there's been a boardroom battle for about the last 15-16 months between Vivendi and Elliott Management, which is commonly known as an activist investor.
Yes.
It spots opportunities and goes in and looks
to make
a lot of money by shaking things up. I think Elliott is pretty keen on divesting some of Telecom Italia's assets, particularly the access network, and thinks it'll derive greater shareholder value doing so. And until about, I think it was April or May this year, Vivendi had board control, but Elliott, in its wily ways, managed to wrest boardroom control from Vivendi, and it's kind of been a battle of words since then, but also incredibly unsettling. While Vivendi and Elliott might think, you know, we want the best thing, you know, this is the best thing for this company, they're really only thinking about their end profit.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is they are devaluing and destabilizing one of the main telcos in Europe.
Yeah.
And they really need to stop.
Yeah.
To put it politely.
I agree.
To put it very politely.
I agree.
For F's sake.
It is... You sometimes wonder if this is just pure executive level ego playing out. You know, the egos at the top of Vivendi and the egos at the top of Elliott just decide to get it on, and Tim is just this proxy in the middle, like some kind of divorce custody battle or something.
Yeah, egos and money.
Yeah.
Will Tim, you know, survive this and be as strong as it could be in 10 years' time? Do they care? Not sure they do. Meanwhile, of course, Iliad has entered the French market and is sweeping up...
Italian. It entered the Italian market?
Oh, what did I say?
French.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Mm. The French company, Iliad, has entered the Italian market and is sweeping up millions of customers and is no doubt benefiting from this unsettling time. And it just makes it even more ridiculous.
And the funny thing is, of course, an activist investor is in there because they bought a stake in the company and they're hoping the value of that stake will go up. And pretty much everything they seem to have done since doing that has driven it in the opposite direction.
Well, these are, remember, these are investors, people who know how the markets work, and sometimes you can make...
Shorting, are you talking about?
I never said that. You did.
Right, okay.
Who knows? You heard it here first. I don't know.
And there might be some other things that you heard here first, although by the time this goes out, probably not. But anyway, I'm over it. I chatted to someone who...
Other investments are available.
Yes. I chatted to someone today who I will just say is a source close to Vivendi.
It's Mrs. Vivendi.
Mrs. Vivendi. And they said he better make sure he gets home on time tonight because I've got dinner ready. No. and I just nearly made Ray gob his water all over the floor. Hope you caught that.
For the abuse you should get for that, yeah.
Yes. And they said they reckon they know who the CEO is going to be, that they're probably going to announce already on Sunday. I'm not going to get into the whether it's past Sunday or whatever. And it's basically one of two guys who are already on the board who were nominated by Elliot at the time. I can look them up, actually. And this will be interesting because, you know, when this comes out, then we can see whether my source was talking rubbish or not. Alfredo Altavilla or Luigi Gubitossi.
Check out that accent.
Yeah.
Gubitossi.
Well, I want to say Altavilla because I can speak Spanish and not Italian, but I don't think Italians do
that. So it would have been Altavilla then?
No, in Spanish it'd be Villa.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, they're both there and they were put there by Elliot. So if either of those became CEO, it'd be hard not to describe them as an Elliot proxy. I'm sure they would insist otherwise. But then Amos Genish was very much put there by Vivendi, but he...
A former Vivendi executive.
There we are. And he doesn't like being referred to as a Vivendi proxy. And of course, these people are very established professionals. I think the first one, Altavilla used to be head of Fiat, and Gubitossi was the head of Wind, the Italian operator.
I thought the head of Fiat died.
Well, it's still around, isn't it? Fiat Group owns all sorts of stuff. They own like Ferrari or something, don't they?
Yeah, but
I think that was the founder.
He was the CEO.
Mr. Fiat. Dave Fiat.
So
that's not to say these are not obviously very established professionals. You're not just going to put in your mate from the pub. but their loyalties would appear to be more towards Elliot than Vivendi. So there's more of this proxy rubbish going on. I also heard from that source that Genish said, while the press were being lied to on the Monday, so this story came out on Sunday that they were going to get rid of him, Telecom Italia straight out said to the press, nope, that's definitely not going to happen. And then next day they got rid of him, which is one of the more sort of flagrant lies you'll ever get. We're used to being lied to, or at least embellished to,
it's
aren't we,
like
Ray?
The football transfer market, you know.
Sort of thing, yeah. But this source told me that Genish himself got written assurance that he wasn't going to get sacked just before he was about to get on a flight to Korea. And so they went, don't worry about it, mate. You're good. Get on the flight. Go on, watch some movies. and then within a couple of days, they just gone, yeah, you know, I said you weren't going to get sacked.
Allied.
Not so much. Anyway, so that's all quite exciting. But, you know, this is, I stress, a single source who's close to Vivendi and not the other side of the story. So it could all be rubbish and we'll find out by the time this is broadcast. But it's all good fun.
Indeed.
And as Ray and I, as we were just sort of saying to each other earlier on, if companies didn't do all this kind of dicking about, we possibly wouldn't have a job.
Yeah.
So thank God they do.
Drama.
My shelf stacking skills are ideal.
Yes, exactly.
Still finally honed.
I don't know how to do anything else except write about telecoms companies dicking about, so it's just as well they continue to do so. So on that note, Yeah, I've got one more thing, but I'll put the ball back to you as I've spoken for a while. Oracle bought someone.
Yes. So in the ongoing wave of SD-WAN acquisitions, Oracle has acquired Telari. So Cisco's made a number of acquisitions in this space. VMware has, and now Oracle. And I think the interesting thing for me is, I'll make this incredibly short, is that maybe 6 or 7 years ago, roughly, Oracle made, over the period of about 12 to 18 months, made a whole a bunch of acquisitions to boost up and help to create Oracle Communications, yeah, a part of the larger tech company that focused on the communication service provider space. And then after that, kind of went a bit quiet.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, still there, certainly not as active. And I wonder if this is a return or some kind of effort to get back more in the game, because they certainly didn't make the most. Oracle did not make the most of those acquisitions over the years. And it's very interesting to see them to come back in at this point.
Yeah, one thing that it's only just occurred to me now, and this could be rubbish, and I encourage you to tell me if it is. The IBM acquisition of Red Hat.
Mm.
So Red Hat's quite strong software-wise in the telecoms vertical, or at least quite active.
Mm-hmm.
And so IBM buying Red Hat, obviously among the things it gets from that is a greater stake in the telecoms vertical than it would otherwise. It just occurs to me maybe that, you know, you were implying there was a sort of wave of M&A. I know you're speaking specifically about SD-WAN. But, you know, maybe these things have a habit of snowballing. You see that your competitors are doing some buying, so you feel compelled to get involved.
Well, I think this is probably the Oracle move is probably on the back of the Cisco and VMware activity.
Right.
You know, this would have been going on for X number of months. But I think, you know, ongoing consolidation between what would have traditionally been IT companies,
yeah,
and telecoms companies. I mean, Red Hat is not a telecoms company, but it's going to play a bigger role in the telecom, yeah, space as telecoms companies essentially become connected cloud companies.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see a lot more consolidation, that's for sure, as right, we have done for the last 10, 15 years, really.
Yes, indeed. But as you say, you know, even more so across that, the dividing line between IT and telecoms,
yeah,
is becoming ever more blurred.
Yeah.
Is that where, so you said specifically SD-WAN, which is software defined wide area network, is that
indeed,
right? Look at me knowing my acronyms.
VMS.
STFU.
So.
is that symptomatic of it? The fact that this, what seems to be a relatively narrow sort of arcane field, but that there's a lot of M&A involving SD-WAN. Is that symptomatic of what we're describing of IT and telecoms merging?
I mean, I guess so. When you say arcane...
Well, it's for most people, so I'm quite impressed that I even understood what that meant.
What,
most
SD-WAN?
People, if you sort of said software-defined WAN, they'd be like, and... So that's what I mean by arcane. It's sort of quite niche, quite techie.
Right.
In the great scheme of things. Perhaps not to you, because you live and breathe it.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, it's a good time to be making these acquisitions, because it's just about to kick off and become a massive market. It's been much talked about, much hyped for a couple of years. But now it's now we're going to see the money flowing, yeah, into this, as a lot of enterprise users come to the end of their previous contracts with VPNs and MPLS connections, and potentially and most likely switch over to SD-WAN,
right,
which is still a relatively immature in many ways and could flop a bit.
Mm.
But this is definitely the right time to be making,
yeah,
making acquisitions.
Assuming they come off as there's a lot of this software defined stuff, which again I'll defer to your and Light Reading's greater knowledge of subject matter, but it still feels like it's in its infancy.
It's yes, I think it's the maturity cycle has got a long way to go.
Mm. Okay, cool. Well, so yeah, Ofcom, I wrote a story today. It was sort of in the mainstream news. I was alerted to it actually just by hearing it on Radio 4 when I was having my coffee this morning, in between talk of Brexit and resignations and
Brexit.
And all that sort of
I've
thing.
Heard of this
yeah,
thing.
Yes, it does crop up. Yes, Ofcom fined EE and Virgin Media. And the reason it fined them is because it reckoned they were overcharging subscribers who wanted to leave their contracts early, which again seems like a rather sort of niche thing. But I think it sort of speaks of a broader, I don't know, sort of culture within communication service providers of, and perhaps utilities on the whole, of a bit of sharp practice towards their customers, i.e. making it as hard as possible to leave once you sign up. So they spend a hell of a lot of money on acquisition. They'll mm-hmm. get people, you know, knocking on your door, all that sort of thing. But then part of the plan is to then make it a real pain for you to leave.
The Comcast.
Right, all that sort of thing. And yeah, and one of the ways is just if you're going to leave, to start sort of charging you sort of punitive fees, especially if you want to leave early. And now the reason they got fined is just because they said that they weren't upfront enough. And the most interesting thing, I think, to me, it's not the fine are a few million quid, whatever. It's not going to break the bank. But it's obviously a bit humiliating to have that all over the news that you've been a naughty CSP. And also that their two responses were different. So EE just sort of went, yeah, all right, fair enough. Whereas Virgin Media just went, this is bull. And there was I republished a full sort of quite an outburst from their CEO, just saying how wrong it all is. And the interesting thing is that the scale of the offence in terms of the amount of subscribers affected and the amount of money involved was much less for Virgin Media, and yet the amount of their fine was more. So not only does this include a 30% discount to EE, which seems bizarre that you can get a discount, special offer on fines this week.
Maybe
30% if
time?
You capitulate and say that you promise to be good from now on, which is...
The fess-up discount.
It is. Mm. But then even 30% off that, it just seems that EE, just on the scale of it, I'm not talking about the severity of what they did wrong, I don't know the minutiae of it, but the amount of time they did it for and the amount of customers it affected was far greater. So I thought perhaps Virgin Media had some reason to feel a little bit hardly done by.
They're on probation.
And all that. Yeah, well, and they've got to be good from now on. So yes, that was interesting. Well, look, I think we've been about half an hour. I know Ray's got important grown-up things to do in a few minutes.
Just to finish the ginger.
He's finished the ginger, man.
There's a little bit left.
He's still shuddering. He's still dabbing his eyes.
That's the best part.
Unless there's anything sort of that you desperately wanted to bring up before
I'm
we knock it on the head.
The inside of my eyeballs. You know, this is serious stuff. Oh, the only other thing I would mention is that, you know, as Cisco's results came out this week, and it looks like they are back in their groove.
Right. The numbers are all good, are they?
The numbers are good, stronger than expected. And, you know, Cisco is a company that's gone through some changes in the past few years in terms of what it has in its portfolio, how it goes about its business, and also in terms of its personnel. And it looks like it might be ready to even more kick ass than before. We'll see, but it looks like the beast again.
I remember this time last year I'll get you another little plug in here at your 2020 event.
Right, 2020 Vision.
2020 yeah. Vision, sorry.
In 3 weeks.
Exactly. What are we going to do when it's like 2021? Because then it'll be like you're looking back. Anyway. I remember there was talk about Cisco, you know, how interested are they in the sort of telecoms vertical compared to historical stuff?
Oh, I think you'll find there was only one person talking about that.
Right, well, yes. But without getting into who that was, I mean, is your impression that they are just as committed to that vertical as ever?
Very much so. Yeah. There was no evidence that they weren't committed to it. I think they showed that at Mobile World Congress last year. Just how involved, I mean, if you look at one of the kind of most compelling stories in global telecoms of the past 2 years, has been Jio in India, how it's come from nowhere as a greenfield operator to completely reshape one of the largest markets in the world. And Cisco is basically a large part of the foundation.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, for what that company's done. So that's a hell of a shop window as well for all the new stuff that Cisco's doing. So, you know, it's just, I mean, it's interesting to see, you know, them looking a bit
stronger. That's kind of my sort of brief assessment of it. And this is across enterprise, but also the service provider space as well from the Cisco perspective. A lot more software focus, obviously, these days, different business models. But, you know, every company, you know, this is a large company that's basically built to make money, and they will do what they need to make money.
Well, indeed. You'd expect no less of them.
Absolutely.
Cool. And that's what we do, isn't it?
Just like us, we are built to spend, make money.
Yeah. That's why we got so much cash. So I'm going to go and get my private jet to the pub. Okay, cool. Well, thanks a lot for that, Ray.
And I'm going to finish the dribbles in the tiny bottle of ginger.
Well, you can't have hated it that much if you're finishing it off.
No, he likes it.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, well, look, thanks a lot for listening, and make sure you join us for the next one.